Voice of the Caribbean Radio, VOC Radio. Stay locked on.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. I'm your host, Andre Huey. On today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis, we speak to Mr. Vernon Springer. He is a broadcaster at Point FM in Antigua and Barbuda. He is from St. Kitts and Nevis. He actually worked at one of the radio stations in St. Kitts and Nevis, and he recently won an award in one of the categories at the Antigua and Barbuda Global Music and Media Awards. The same awards, by the way, our sister media entity, SKN Newsline, won as Best Regional Media. So we'll be talking about that. He's a former colleague of mine as well, and so we'll have a conversation on that. And later on in the show, we'll talk agriculture. We speak to Nevis Navision Agriculturalist, Mr. Danny Atherton, on agriculture, the state of agriculture on St. Kitts and Nevis, and some recommendations as to what he thinks should be done to help improve the sector. We'll also hear from the president of the St. Kitts Consortium of Farmers and Food Producers, Mr. Meshack Alford. He recently, on an interview on Freedom FM, he spoke to that issue. I had the chance to interview him. All that coming up on today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis. But first, we'll take a break and be right back.
Voice of the Caribbean Radio, VOC Radio. Stay locked on.
Online radio has never been this great. It's Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Tune into Voice of the Caribbean Radio for great Caribbean programs, news, entertainment, sports, and current affairs. Wake up each morning and be inspired with One Day at a Time with Kim Huey. Stay abreast with news across the Caribbean and internationally with the Caribbean News Hour, and be entertained with shows like Reggaeville, Caribbean Classics, and Jive Music Show. Visit our website or listen us on TuneIn Radio. There is so much more on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. Check website or program schedule. Stay abreast with news on St. Martin with FMN News. Visit www.smn-news.com for up-to-date news, scoops, opinions, and hard-hitting facts. FMN News, we tell it like it is. Visit our website, www.smn-news.com.
Coming to you on your laptops, phones, and computers, VOC Radio and voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. As I indicated just before the break, we have on the line with us Mr. Vernon Springer of Point FM in Antigua and Barbuda. Mr. Springer is no stranger to St. Kitts and Nevis. In fact, Mr. Springer is from St. Kitts and Nevis, doing some big things in Antigua. Springer, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome to you. And let me just take some time out, Andre, to congratulate you on your latest award for all the years and dedication. So congratulations are in order to SKN Newsline.
Right. Thank you very much. And congratulations to you as well, which is actually the subject of this discussion, because you also won an award in Antigua and Barbuda. I want you to tell us more about the award that you won for the work you're doing in Antigua.
Well, first of all, Andre, to get to two finals, it speaks volumes. And I first got the information, the email that I was nominated for these three categories. it sort of kind of caught me by surprise, but not without measure of, you know, the work that you would have, volume of work that you would have put in over a period of time. As you know, we would have been trained under someone like Clive Backus, who would have pushed us in all circles. You know, you had Tony Frederick, you had Bert David, yourself, the late Ken Richards, and then, you know, the technical crew between Richard and Trent and GQ, Patrick, all the guys basically there, even our late friend Karen, who's gone. So I really got to pay tribute to a lot of those folks there, you know, who would have helped me really on this journey. So it was a pretty interesting journey. I got nominated in three categories: Best Radio Show Talk, Best Radio Show Social and Educational Talk, and Radio Host of the Year. So to win two out of the three, which would have been the Best Radio Show Talk and the Best Radio Show Educational Talk, would really have meant something to me. Because in Antigua and Barbuda, as you would be aware, you're coming up against the likes of, you know, folks on Observer Radio. You're coming up against the Sly J. WTP was originally on ZDK. And you have all these other radio stations in Antigua and Barbuda. So I had to model Point on the Street in a very, you know, strategic way, because almost all of the programs were centered around more or less politics. Mm-hmm. I only did politics, Andre, when the election campaign basically was on, you know. But outside of that, I structured it over there where you had, for reference, my spiritual leader, Dr. Stephen Apostle Andrew. We have a program called First Fruits. Then I also have Dr. Colin Coker, The Gift of Health. Then you have a program which is slated like Insurance Lookout, which is sponsored by Caribbean Alliance Insurance Company Limited. Then we almost talk mental health. And then what I did is that I also designed a special program for small businesses in Antigua and Barbuda. I remember when I first started that program, some of the patrons were saying, well, listen, I don't like radio, I don't like talk. And then all of a sudden that took off, you know, Made in Antigua and Barbuda, that was designed for. And then we also had a link up with WinFM 98.9, a station which I would have come up with. Then we did more link up in the United States and also in the Cayman Islands. So I designed it in such a way, really, that it was always educational, it was always structural, and tried to do as much things outside of the box. Gave a lot of NGOs opportunities to come on and talk about the NGOs themselves, and really, you know, set up a educational platform, because there's so many things happening that sometimes you miss it. And then even though we have social media, Andre, radio is still powerful.
Of course, of course. Radio is a very powerful medium. I'm going to come to that in a bit. But just for our listeners to know, you won the best radio show talk in the talk category. And what was the other one? Best radio host?
And best radio show, social and educational.
Right. And this is the longstanding Antigua and Barbuda Global Music and Media Awards. Been going on now for almost 10 years. So to be recognized, you know, in by them for your work on radio is phenomenal.
Well, it more so, Andre, I mean, even to be nominated and get to the final.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because you're nominated, then you have to go against, you know, others. And as you pointed out, there's some heavy hitters in morning radio in Antigua. So obviously, you know.
And it was also made up of other international people outside of the region as well, too. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, you have to be on top of your game. So I give God thanks, Andre.
Yes, indeed. And as you indicated earlier, SK Newsline, which I'm the news director of, was nominated nominated and won the best regional media category. And we too were in a heavy group. We had people like, we had entities like ZIZ there, CNC3 from Trinidad and Tobago, TVJ from Jamaica. And we were able to, out of all of those big name media houses across the region, SK Newsline came out on top. So I'm grateful for that, and I give God thanks for that as well.
It's about content, right? And you know, Andre, we do things outside of the box.
Yeah.
Everybody try to do things in a conservative way, but we always think outside the box.
Yeah, exactly. You also pointed out, and I'm going to ask you a bit about your show, but before I get to that, you pointed out the fact that both of us worked together at Win FM years ago under the tutelage of the great Clive Backus, and we would have learned a lot from him and from the environment at Win FM over the years that have made us into who we are today. You're doing your great work at Point FM, you know, and my work with Voice of the Caribbean and SK Newsline. Talk to us about that and just share with our listeners the experience that we would have gained at Win that has helped us and is helping us today.
Well, you know, I come on the backdrop of a number of personnel who would have really helped me over the years. I can remember when I first got into, as I would consider it to be, playing around a little bit with broadcasting, sharing your own comments. You know, you had Sugar City Rock, you would have also had Junie Liebert, the late Valtie Thomas, somebody would have been banding around. I can remember Carl Weiss Liebert was still around, and the late Steadwhite Teixeira on the sports program. You know, he used to give me an opportunity to be able to call in and give an update and, you know, share your analysis on whatever sport it was, really. But it was Joseph Redspire who came to St. Kitts and Nevis during his days as one of the top regional commentators and also as the director of OECS Sports Desk, and ran a workshop down at OTI in those days. And I can remember at the end of it, Andre, Reds pulled me aside and says, I don't want you to just be a cricket commentator. I want you to get involved and to learn all aspects of sports. And I thought, kind of looked at Reds and said, you crazy? And he said, no, learn the rules of all the games. And for you to be a top regional broadcaster, you have to be able to move yourself out of the bracket. You can't just come and just say, oh, I'm a cricket commentator, because he says cricket commentary is not going to be wrong all the time. There are so many other sports. So I got involved in, I did commentary for track and field, for netball, basketball. And then he started kind of develop you. So outside of me being a professional coach, that was my limelight. The way things got real serious, Andre, was I remember while I was coaching, I got a call one day from Clive Backus, who said to me that if I know where Win FM was in the Sands Complex, he says, Michael King, the late Michael King from TDC, they wanted to meet with me to have a meeting. So I came home, Andre, from practice, and I told my mother that Clive Backus called me about a meeting. And she said, well, go on and hear what the meeting is going to be about. So I went, and they told me that, listen, we've been following your progress, XYZ, and we want you to come and read sports for us on Win FM. At that time, I was a little bit kind of reluctant because I told him that I was pretty much involved in my coaching on my cricket and based on the times and the preparation. But anyhow, they told me they'll give me 48 hours. So I came home, Andre, told my mother, and then I came up with a negative sort of, you know, display to her and said, well, Mom, I don't know how this is going to work out because, you know, I go to the park in the afternoon to do my coaching, and so I don't know if I'd be able to balance this. I remember, Andre, she looked at me and she says, you better make it work. She didn't have to say anything else, Andre. you know what I mean? just the tone in how she said it. And so I ended up calling back Clive the same time and said, yes, you know. And the rest really was history from there. But the thing about Clive that was phenomenal that a lot of people don't understand is that Clive understood broadcasting. And he pushed you in almost every area. I just didn't come in and just did sports. I did news. I did hardcore politics. I produced most of the shows for Win FM. In fact, I can remember we broke so many barriers because we were the only radio station that journeyed across outside of ZIZ and covered Culturama to the extent full, created our own new panel. And Clive gave me that ambition and that assurance and that leadership along with Trent to go across and produce the program. So we went and we created a new cadre of personnel. You know, we had personnel for Queen Show, we had our panel for Calypso Show. You know what I mean? I had my own show, Good to Go Show. I was where I was able to generate some interest and my brother, Calvin Icehouse-Up Johnson, to be able to bring him onto the stage to showcase his talent as a Calypsonian and give him some confidence and promote local music to an extent there. So I had some good times. We learned a lot because the persons who passed through under Clive, you know, you had Ken Richards, you had yourself, you had GQ, everybody. It was an entire complete team. Even when Lorraine came, Lorraine brought a business aspect to it. And our fan base was just solid. So we almost, you know, Clive set the bar high, standards, the late Reggie Amri, who was chairman of the board. He too was very instrumental in my progress. You know, he always, he listened to me and would give me a little bit different feedback. Fergie, you know, I mean, sometimes even though me and him would have clashed on a number of times, but we all blended. When we came out to represent Win FM, we came out like a complete team because Clive had a vision for broadcasting and Win FM was just completely different.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that because as you were talking about Clive putting you in all facets of areas for you to learn and for you to grow, I can testify to that. I think everybody who worked at Win in the broadcast division can confess to that because it was there, it was at Win that I actually learned. This is the irony of the whole thing, Stringer. It was actually at Win FM that I learned video editing at a radio station of all places, not a TV station. I learned video editing at a radio station, and it was Clive who was trying to push the boundaries at Win FM to, you know, be more than just a radio station. He realized that, you know, the way the world was going, the way media was going, digital media was going to be the future. And you couldn't just remain at one format. A radio station had to be a TV station, at least online, and had to be other things to other people. And so he wanted to introduce that. And he bought, the company bought the equipment, the cameras, you know, these little portable cameras. And I took up the responsibility of learning it. And he pushed me to learn video editing and to create video content for Win FM. And after I left Win, you know, I kind of came with that same mentality and those skills and was able to develop SK Newsline. So I, you know, can confess to the fact that Clive was the kind of person who would push you and stretch you to do more than what you thought you were capable of doing.
And he was big on training. He was big on training too, because any training, opportunity for us between me and you understand, I come from, I benefited tremendously in broadcasting. I had to go to Jamaica to, you know, get myself started out with my writing skills for stories, for broadcasting. Any opportunity, any training opportunity, Clive was big on that, really.
That
you know what I mean? So all of us really benefited in some way. When you see the product of us branching off in different areas today, we are well-versed, well-trained, and he always told us, you know, you got to break down the norm. I remember, Andrea, and I know you would testament to this. You know, normally in broadcasting, you were told that, you know, your clips are supposed to be no longer than 30 seconds or whatever. Well, Win FM came and changed the whole landscape. Mm-hmm. You know, so I come from, when you're doing news, you know, we give you enough time. We didn't rush you. You know, so I come from. So when we were doing news clips or sports clips or whatever, our production was completely different. And everybody was like, whoa. And Clive was, we're going to be different.
Yeah.
We can't go down the same status quo. So we broke down a lot of barriers in a lot of things. And he pushed us to the limits that why sometimes, you know, I can remember Bert and myself, we went on a mission for about 6 weeks to cover a story. I mean, day and night.
Yep.
And we had to give him a weekly update in terms of how far we got, who we would have spoken to, you know, some of the personnel. 6 weeks between Sinkis and Nevis. You know, many nights, days and night, mornings, and so we had to, you know, camp out and, you know, Bert call me and say, boy, let's go, boy. Remember, we got to do the story. You know what I mean? We got to report back to the boss. That didn't have anything to do with executing our job, you know. That there was no excuse. You had to produce the news. You also had to make sure that you meet your timelines. In spite of all of that.
Exactly. Yeah, indeed. So definitely it's fair to say that we came from good pedigree in terms of training and experience working at Win over the years. So now for our listeners, could you just tell us now about the Point in the Streets morning show that you do on Point FM in Antigua? Talk to us about the show. What is the show about?
Well, the initial concept of coming to Antigua and Barbuda, as you know, would have been to Leeward Islands Cricket Board, Cricket West Indies. And while here, I can remember I got introduced to Point FM first doing the morning program. They had a sports program. I used to link up with Epilus Edwards. And then I had to have an operation on my ingrowing toenails. So I was off for a little while. And then I remember one day, the chairman of the board, Luther Lee, called me and told me that the big man, which was the PM, says, "Boy, we got to try and get Springer back on the air in whatever way, whether he operates from home, whatever, set him up, get him organized in terms of what's happening." And so I was offered a spot on, even though I had my Sports Overflow program with Elwin Francis, they were looking to try to see if they can get me into something else, because John Silcock was a consultant for Point FM. And Point FM consists of Platinum FM 97.9, Point FM 99.1, Point TV, Point Express, and also a Printree. John, who is a consultant to Pointville Communication, indicated that, listen, Springer can handle the morning show. And I remember some people were kind of on the board, were like, "You sure?" I thought he was just into sports. And John kept saying to them all the time, "Yes, that's the mistake that you guys are making. He come from good pedigree, coming out of Win FM days," and he started to. And they were like, "So you know all those things?" And he says, "That's not going to be Springer, but I know that he can handle." So John had really pushed the button. And when I got my opportunity, when they said, "Well, listen, we want you to take over the morning show," they spoke to me today, and then in 2 days' time, I had to meet back with them, and I came with a structured program because, you know, coming out of Win FM, you had to add structure. Mm-hmm. So I had all of my guests for the first week, and made a presentation along with sponsors to the board, and everybody was like blown away because it was like, you know, John sit down there. I could remember that meeting. John sitting in the back of the room. And when I came in and I made the presentation, everybody was like, "Nobody has ever come to Point FM with such a structure." So I had my different segments sponsored for my program, and I just took off straight away from there. So Point on the Street came out of I was searching around for a name and saying, "Boy, I'm gonna name a program." Now, Point FM 99.1 is in the Point and Villa area in St. John's, Antigua and Barbuda. It's just about 50 meters away from the Deepwater Port. And then you have the cruise ship terminal just behind us. So I could automatically look out of my studio window and see the berthing port right there. Global Ports, right in front of me. And then you have the Port Authority just further down the road. So it's called Point. That's where Dr. Sir Maclean Emmanuel King Charters come from. King Zakari, all those guys, all the top Calypsonians are from Downing Point. So I sat down, Andre, and I said, "Boy, I got to get something which could be kind of sort of unique." And I came up with Point on the Street, and my technicians, Eric and Cavi and Noah, I said, "Boy, guys, I'm going to name my program Point on the Street." And Eric, my graphic designer, says, "Well, we ain't just if that's what you want, then we're gonna create a flyer out of it." So if you realize the street is spelled STRETZ, mm-hmm.
Yes, something different.
Yeah, something different there. So in terms of what's going on, so and it's gone in leaps and bounds, Andre. So settling in and like I said, getting there. One of the concepts when I presented to the board is I said to them, the vision of my program is to make money. It's not just going to be all talk. My concept is to make money for the station. So I designed Point on the Street to be an economic value to make money. Before what you would have had a lot of people because it was first initial as a community station. Everybody would have just come in and everybody would just be talking. And I said, no, bills got to be paid. When you come on radio, content, you got to be able to make sure that you could pay for that content. And so I went the reverse as compared to everybody else. Now, it's a lot of work, Andre, but it's something that I love and I challenge myself. And I give God thanks that I was given the opportunity to serve in such a big way. And then, while being there and having the context of the program, I was then offered director of operations because the board now saw the trust in terms of my value to the company in terms of how I styled my program. And so I was entrusted with being appointed as director of Pointville Operation, director of operations to deal with almost the whole mantle sponsorship for most of the newspaper and the different radio shows. So Creative Platinum in a sports and cultural radio station, where when we had cricket coverage, we would bring cricket, because you had a point in time where ABS, the state-owned radio, they weren't bringing any regional cricket, weren't bringing any international cricket. And so I went about that, got sponsorship for that also, and then we developed into other areas, whether it be football or whatever. And then we also have a steel pan show and highlight showcase of local talent on Platinum FM 97.9. So it's been a great transformational work. And, you know, this would have been preparation, because I would have done most of this on Win FM 98.9. So this was easy for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, again, Springer, I just want to congratulate you again on your accomplishment. And as you rightfully pointed out, you know, we come from eras that are, you know, have taught us well. And so as a result of that, we can diversify ourselves in various areas. Before we go, I just want you to, any final words you may have as we look to close?
Well, let me first of all, you know, thank my mother and my dad passed away. And there are a lot of people who would have motivated me over the period of time. My mother was a school teacher. My mother was born in St. Lucia. My father was born in Montserrat, worked at the Sinkers Bucking Company for over 50 years. My stepmother, Isilma Springer, my father's second wife, is still alive, and she ended up becoming my mother. I really want to thank her. My brothers and my sisters, who've been a tower of strength to me over the years. My children, Antonia Tracy, everybody knows Antonia Springer. My son, Anwar Springer. Zabeda Springer, who is studying law in Barbados. And Tracy Willock Springer, who is a footballer. And then I have my little granddaughter. So my family has been really, really special to me. My immediate family, Trisha Fox, and all of the other support systems were put in place. So I really want to take some time out to be able to also salute Uncle Terrence Dolphin and Uncle Jabbo. Junie Leibert, like I said, I mentioned before, Glenn Goes Philip, somebody who believed in me and gave me a real possible opportunity there. There's a gentleman, a couple of people out of Cairn, Lennox Leibert, is somebody who always followed me. Even when he was away, always gave me that support. His playing days as a sportsman coming out there, followed me all around there. Lennox is somebody, Sci-Fi Philip, Waylon Vaughn, those are personnel there. As you would know also, the entire sports department, in fact, my work there, Noel Gishard. Gishard would be is really my lifelong friend. We would have changed the whole concept of sports in St. Kitts and Nevis, along with all of the other coaches, Edgar Gilbert, Clem Hicks. There are some of the other cricket coaches would have been there. My partner, Robert Pemberton, who I worked tirelessly with to be able to make sure that we will execute a lot of things there. All of the directors who are of commander in the sports department, I thank you for your mission. I thank the people of St. Kitts and Nevis, mainly. You know, when I look across into Nevis, Almond Descent, very, very, very important and person would have helped also in a lot of the production line there. Stevenson Manners, you know, Patterson Fleming, there's a gentleman in Nevis called Patterson Fleming. Patterson Fleming is somebody there. Tessa Howell, the list is long, but I'm saying the entire nation of St. Kitts and Nevis. And in fact, everybody, all the fans almost all over the world, I really want to thank everybody for their support. Tony Berry, I can forget Tony Berry. Tony Berry in St. Kitts is somebody who was always there. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, pushing the boundaries all the time, supporting us all the time. Seymour Williams from Island Auto Supply. He and his family, Seymour was always there for us. I remember when we go to Nevis, Seymour would sponsor our vehicle. During the Culturama time, you know, Win FM, Trent and myself, so that we could be able to move around, get around there. So I thank everybody. If I missed any names, everybody know the importance that they would have played during this time. And the journey is not finished yet. I got some unfinished business to get done still, and we'll forge ahead, Andre, in broadcasting. And to you and your entire team, I hope that in 2024, Andre, that we can also have a link up with you, because you also provided a platform for me as well, to be able to sell our stories. You will realize that we did a number of Caribbean link-ups.
Yes.
We lost our friend during the period of time there, out of Grenada. Yes. There. So, you know, So, but we continue to work together as one.
Yes, indeed. Well, Springer, it is my pleasure, and we certainly look forward to even more collaboration in the new year when that happens, and maybe even before the year ends. And again, congratulations on your recent award.
And congratulations to you and your family and your staff for your award too. It just, I know Clive will be listening to this. I want to thank Clive Backus and his wife and his entire family, you know, because you have to have a gift, Andre, to identify talent. And Clive was brilliant at that.
Yes, indeed. Well, again, Springer, thank you so much. And we'll continue to connect.
All right. God bless you, sir. Right. Have a good one.
That's Vernon Springer there from Point FM on the line, speaking to us about his recent acknowledgement and award from the Antigua and Barbuda Global Music and Media Awards. Stay tuned to Voice of the Caribbean Radio. More after the break.
Simply the best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. Get insightful information with guests from the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's I'm Making It Happen with host Nicole Tyson every Tuesday at 11 a.m. with rebroadcasts at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
The Entrepreneurial You, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
You're listening to Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome back to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. As we indicated at the start of the show, we'll be presenting you now an interview I had with Mr. Daniel Atherton. He is an agriculturalist on Nevis. He's very experienced in the field, has been combining hydroponics as well as traditional farming on his hydroponics farm on Nevis. We had a sit down with him recently at his farm where we spoke on a wide range of issues as it relates to the development of agriculture in St. Kitts and Nevis.
Well, success is relative, first of all. And I think success comes through being persistent with what you're doing. Adjusting wherever you see pitfalls and making a step in the area where you saw the weakness that you have now done something to correct it. So I think that when someone referred to success, I guess it's premised on the fact that I believe in leading by example. So I certainly think that instead of talking that for my extension methodology, they told me that the method demonstration and then there's result demonstration. So what I do, I try to perfect the methodology so that I can give someone a stepwise, you know, process from how I start, whether it is selection of my seeds, my planting material, you know, the selection of varieties and those sorts of things, right through to the care, the maintenance and operation of the business and so forth. How do I protect the resource that I've already put, water and land and all of these things together? And then once I have gotten to that place, I try to repeat that which gave me the best result.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of your operations, there has always been the mantra that we need sustainable agriculture. We need to feed ourselves, first of all, and we need to spend more and invest more in agriculture. Both in Kitts and Nevis, can we have a sustainable model for agriculture in St. Kitts and Nevis?
Well, we have to think of several things. We have to look at our population size. We have to look at the transient population, which is that which comes through the hotels. And when we have to look at the fixed population, that is those of us who live here, then we have to look at the nutrition, both the habits and the eating style of those persons who are here. We have to look at the effect of those persons, the transients, what they are asking for when they come. Are they coming for the experience, or are they coming to us with the hope that they can still get a sirloin steak that they get in the United States? In my own mind, I don't think that that ought to be what we try to do. We ought to try to give them an indigenous experience where when they come here, they are desirous of trying new things. And if they tried it and it did not work, then they revert to some of the things that they know best. But I certainly think that the tourism package should be pushed in such a way that, I mean, the agriculture is favorably impacted because it becomes experiential. It becomes something that when they come, they are desirous. Like, for example, someone goes to Jamaica. They want to know that they are having ackee and saltfish. What we're saying is that whatever is the signature dishes at the time during the year, whether it's Culturama or Carnival or whatever, that people should come with that expectation that, listen, I'm in a tropical place, so I'm not going to be looking for plums, peaches, and nectarines. I'm going to be looking for amripali. I'm going to be looking for soursop. I'm going to be looking for a banana. Things that are tropical.
There's a lot of talk about government needs to invest more. We need to import less, you know, to cut the food import bill. What do you think are the steps that should be taken to take agriculture to the next level?
Well, that's a good thing. I thought you would say, because it's not unidimensional. You have several dimensions. You have a policy dimension. Then you have a planning dimension, which is after a policy that is friendly to security of tenure for lands, for people who are the landless. Also, an opportunity for developing that infrastructure so that when they get in that area, you know, they have all of those necessary inputs, whether it is the tractors, the inputs for infrastructure such as irrigation, solar, these sorts of things, good roads so that you can transport the items out. And also a human capacity in terms of the people who are going to be the agriculture teachers, who are going to be able to handhold these people, and not necessarily people who are in competition with the farmers, but people who are in cooperation with them, who see what they're doing as being very important for national development, for GDP, for contribution to nutrition, for contribution to employment. And so you have to have that dimension, and then you have to have a dimension that minimizes waste, value addition, which allows you to do things that preserve in as nutrition-filled a way as possible. Because once you boil things, you kill a lot of enzymes. So we're talking about fresh packaging so that people can have that nutrition-filled food item. So we're saying that when you have that, you must also have a post-harvest, front-of-label packaging, and markets that will welcome the products that you have. Because you have shown them that you're consistent in quantity, you're consistent in quality, and you're consistent in price.
All right, so before we go on the tour, you have Nevis Hydro Gardens. Just walk us through briefly on the history, how you got started. How did this come to be?
Nevis Hydro Gardens is a pioneer in hydroponics, but it was on a piece of land that, you know, my father was once the Christian John Atherton was the president of the Catesby Farmers Association, and himself and people like John Hanley and several other Joseph Claxton and other noteworthy farmers, crops and livestock, they came together and they procured inputs together. And they, at that time, were the beneficiaries of the 2 million gallons of water that were in the catchments up at Stonehill. And so they were able to do their production here. And then once my father passed on, I took up this land and I decided I'm going to carry the baton. And then we decided that we were going to be pioneers around 1997, January 1998 was when we sold our first set of lettuce. And so that is basically how we got here. And what I can say is that it has been an opportunity to bring technology, to bring a response to, climate change even before there was climate change. This was actually more to be able to meet the shortfall that we used to have in vegetables during the post-March period of the year, because it was rain-fed. So that was our initial reason for getting into this type of hydroponic farming. And so we have decided to use that and many other modern technologies, which I'll be happy to go to when we watch through the process.
And generally, on average, what's the production like in terms of your output on a weekly, monthly basis on the various crops?
It varies. If you have a lot of bananas clustering and so forth, something like 8 to 10 months after they have been planted, you can have 30, 50 bunches of banana, each averaging about 20-something to 30 pounds. You can also have planting of a similar size. We can have guava. From at 54 trees, we can be doing like 100 pounds every 3 days. So it varies. Pawpaw, it depends on the density of the pawpaw population and the size of the pawpaw. You can have hundreds of pounds of pawpaw, but we've learned that you cannot produce too much because it's very easy to flood the market in St. Kitts and Nevis, because especially during the rain-fed periods and during the periods when the active tourist season, which is October to about March. Anytime outside of that region, you can have two or three people that can effectively, if they're extremely good producers, producing a lot of the produce that you can use locally. A significant thing. I think one of your earlier questions was about imports and stuff like that. We would not be able to reduce imports. So I think that's not a practical even suggestion. But I think what it does do, it there was a time when Nevis, for all intents and purposes, was self-sufficient in a lot of its meat products because it was a cultural-led approach because we were eating what we produce. Now what is happening is that people are eating what they see on TV. And so we are led by the fads of the television. But there was a time when people were led in St. Kitts and Nevis by what, taste and preference based on what was available locally. So what would be seasonal, if cassava was in abundance, then they would use that. If there was a lot of harvesting of corn, then we had a corn mill in Gingerland that you would have the fine corn and the coarse corn, and then they'll put that up when they had large quantities so that they can have later. So Nevis was always sufficient in fish, but then after Christina, a lot of people just, for about 7 years, people just didn't eat a lot of fish. And I think that was when, in Nevis per se, people started eating a lot of chicken. But prior to 1970, Nevisians were eating yard fowls and pigs and mutton and chevron and beef that they produce around them.
Why do you think reducing the food import bill, which is also a thrust now of CARICOM, they're now looking to reduce 25 by 25, is not a practical approach?
I wouldn't say that it's not practical. It is a pragmatic approach. But the thing about it is that the practicality is understanding that you will never be able to replace taste and preference. And that is what I tell you. We are not led by culture. We are led by what you see on the TV. And I think that is one of the main determinants. So once you can understand that, you would understand why we cannot do that. Then the other thing too is that in order for you to do that, you must have that critical ability to produce quantities, quality, uniformity, so that you can satisfy all people and also make it affordable. Because food sovereignty and food nutrition, is about being able to get something, get top quality product, but that you can afford. Because you don't want to have a top quality product that only the haves can afford.
That interview with Mr. Daniel Atherton. We'll take another break. When we come back, a final segment of the show, we'll hear from Mr. Meshack Alford of the St. Kitts Consortium of Farmers and Food Producers.
Voice of the Caribbean Radio, VOC Radio. Stay locked on.
Online radio has never been this great. It's Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Tune into Voice of the Caribbean Radio for great Caribbean programs, news, entertainment, sports, and current affairs. Wake up each morning and be inspired with One Day at a Time with Kim Huey. Stay abreast with news across the Caribbean and internationally with the Caribbean News Hour and be entertained with shows like Reggaeville, Caribbean Classics, and Jive Music Show. Visit our website or listen us on TuneIn Radio. There is so much more on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. Check website or program schedule. Stay abreast with news on St. Martin with FMN News. Visit www.smn-news.com for up-to-date news, scoops, opinions, and hard-hitting facts. FMN News, we tell it like it is. Visit our website, www.smn-news.com.
Coming to you on your laptops, phones, and computers, VOC Radio on voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome back to the final segment of the show of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis for this week. As I indicated before the break, we'll be speaking now to Mr. Meshack Alford. We're sharing a portion of an interview we did on Freedom FM recently. Mr. Meshack Alford is the president of the St. Kitts Consortium of Farmers and Food Producers.
As the name suggests, you are representing farmers and food producers. And the food producers, I take it, also includes agro-processors as well.
Yes, yes.
Talk to us about what it is that the consortium does and the work that you do.
Okay, well, the Consortium of Farmers and Food Producers is an organization registered formally with the government. We consist of both crop farmers and vegetable farm, crop and livestock farmers, but also we have the agro-processors with us as well. It's really not just individual membership we serve, but we also have a number of cooperative societies that are represented there. About seven of the presidents of the different co-ops are registered and sitting with us at this time. Practically, we are more engaged in a lot of the lobbying on behalf of the farmers. So over the last 6, 7, 8 months, we have been making the rounds, as you just indicated, reaching out to those who are on the corridor of power to see what we can leverage on behalf of the farming community. We've been in meetings at varying levels, whether it's the department or the ministry or the minister or the prime minister. We've made those rounds to make those conversations going. We've also been on the radio stations, as you said, because we have to get our voice out there, our own perspectives on the issues at hand. And we also trying our best to see how we can serve each other by coming together and pooling resources where we can.
Okay. Now, I take it that there are a number of issues or concerns or interests that your membership would have that you would like to have addressed by the authorities. So if you could just speak to some of those.
Well, just to say that this body would have started just outside of COVID-19 or just on the back of the heels. We would have approached the permanent secretary of agriculture then, I think his name is Bishop Collins, at the time, because we had some concerns regarding, first was a stimulus package that was issued to farmers at the time, We wanted to basically have a dialogue with the ministry to see how we can do things a little bit different and better so that we all can be advancing the sector together. Our primary areas of focus has been, and we've stuck to them over time. One, we were looking to see that there's a farmer's voice. And a farmer's voice in our head meant that there is a board of some kind, some body that can be set up that can have some oversight over some of the issues that advance some of the projects, the policies, and the programs and advance on behalf of the sector. And also our voice, meaning that we are able to go out in the airwaves on the social media ways and give representation on the issues using our own voices as farmers as well. Because what we found, there are many persons, not only in the media, but the media itself, the banks, the government personnel, who are speaking on the matters, and there is just a shortage of the farmers' voice on these issues. So we think that that is important. The second aspect of it, in terms of having a voice, we wanted to basically begin to advance for policies regarding financing. We know, generally speaking, farmers are considered unbankable in many respects. So we have also started conversations with financial institutions in that regard. But again, asking for partnership along the way with the government and whatever entity can come and chime in on the same matter. So we are looking as much as possible to see how much we can get some assurance that we can have a better framework when it comes to financing agriculture and so on. Mm-hmm. We would have put a proposal as well to the First Federal for consideration. We're waiting for some feedback on that as well. So finance and a voice. But also, too, we look at issues of infrastructure. And anything that you want to build, advance in this economy, you must have some frame. You must have something to lay things on. And so we are looking at the fact that many times persons are saying that the farming community, farmers in general, are not consistent with their production. And one of the things that they may not understand that, one, infrastructure, investment in the necessary infrastructure is not forthcoming. One, you're already considered bankable, so it's difficult to go and get your own financing. And two, the government policies are not such a line that, you know, is meeting all to these in an adequate and appropriate way. Mm-hmm. Marketing was another thing that we keep pushing conversations with the local markets. In fact, historically speaking, there's never really been a standing market for local produce. Mm-hmm. You go as far back as the mercantile trade up to now. And so we are now pushing to see how can we carve out a space. Gone are the days when farmers should really be planting in the blind, you know, like not understanding where the stuff are going to be sold once they would have planted them. And that's why you see people keep complaining the same things. You know, farmers have produced the same time and then they go on the same time, you know. One of the things is that market information is not available. By extension, markets are not necessarily available to the farmers as it should be, right? And among those are just some of the four or five key issue areas that we've been pushing. Of course, there are other areas that can come up during the course of our conversation here.
Before we get to some of the issues, let me just talk a bit about your, if you could talk a bit about your composition. Mm-hmm. I know you said, as his name suggests, you represent farmers, food producers, agro-processors, etc.
Yeah.
Would you say that you represent a large cross-section of the farmers? Because I know sometimes, even in this industry, here in St. Kitts, you know, some farmers may hold a head of saying, well, you know, I'm more an individual. I prefer to function individually. We've seen attempts before to form cooperatives and have farmers working together, and in some instances it hasn't been quite successful.
Yeah.
What would you say as it relates to your membership as at this point in time?
Well, if you go back in the genesis of the group, really we started off more in a very ad hoc nature, just coming together, having meetings in Sandy Point at the market there, using SPAC's facilities there. And we would meet from time to time, basically hashing out what are the real concerns, what are the real challenges in the sector. And then once that conversation would have matured, we recognized that you need to bring some kind of formality to the organization. And so we pursued the act of recruiting other persons in the conversation. Again, having gone through a series of conversations with farmers, we recognized too that, of course, there is a leadership core group. But then you needed to widen that leadership to get more perspective on things. And and to get a better understanding of the situation on the ground. And so we move towards bringing in the leaders of the consortium, who shares equal leadership responsibilities across the table, across the board. So we have been in the recruitment phase for a little bit, then we pull back a bit to go back into some development strategizing kind of work, and then we're going to be doing some of the recruitment again. But at this stage, we have around seven members who are CARP presidents. And if you know, if you go by the average, what it takes to be a CARP, you need about 15 members to be and maintain a CARP. All right, so if you do the multiplication to the math, you see what that counts to. And then on average, individual membership is around 42 or thereabouts. So, and we cut across all communities, particularly throughout the entire island. We're not on Nevis, we're on St. Kitts in particular. So we have farmers from St. Peter's, Cayon, Mansions, Newton, Sandy Point, St. Paul's, come all the way back around, who are involved and participating in our mechanism.
Okay, so then in a nutshell, you would represent a wide cross-section of those in the industry. Earlier you spoke about financing for farmers, and that has always been a major challenge. A lot of the financial institutions will probably say, you know, well, it's difficult to fund or risky to fund agriculture because of the one, you know, whether or not you're going to have returns on your investment, and two, issues of, you know, in the hurricane season, we just had, you know, a storm passing on the weekend, flash flooding, you know, a lot of implements can get damaged in this instance. Maybe you can't go into much details because of your proposal currently before one of the institutions, but what solution or what proposal can you offer, or assurances you can offer with membership to say, well, there is a solution, there is a way farmers can get funded, there is a way you can convince the financial institutions that they can put their money on farming and agriculture?
It's an interesting ask. On one hand, persons are saying that farmers are not being businesslike, acting like businessmen. And in another aspect of things, we are saying, why should we fund the farming community? Well, based on my understanding of the farming community, based on me working with so many of them, these are businessmen. You mean I could come off the beaten path and say, I went to a farm recently and I saw an excavator on the farm, right? And the farmer owned that machine. The farmer owned tractors, the farmer owned different implements, and is practically carrying out an operation like any other serious business on the island. And farmers are at different levels of development when you think about it. And some of these farmers have been in the business for some 30 years. They've built their homes, they've sent their children off to school, they look after their family by way of the farm, and 100% so. So when we're talking about financing for the agricultural persons, and we're talking about the risks that are involved, the risks have always been involved, the risk of storms have always been around. How are we going to build a resilient class of people without affording access to financing to them? And then only when you have access to financing, you can put in the buffers and the risk mitigating measures that we are talking about here. So I believe that the conversation is a bit reversed. What I seem to pick up most of the time is the financial institutions have a serious lacuna in terms of knowledge about agriculture. There's no real body who specializes in agricultural finance in these organizations. So it's a knowledge part of it, and that's why we believe that in having the conversations with these organizations, then we could begin to see not only where their misconceptions are, but also where we can also improve ourselves to make ourselves more bankable. In our conversations, we recognize, of course, farmers have their role to play. You make a little bit of money here, there, some down the road, you make sure you pass it to your accounts and so forth, because we have a tendency, as soon as we make a little money, we go and buy stuff for the farm again.
And that's how we end today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. You can listen to the show again or rebroadcast on Wednesday and Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, or you can visit our website www.voiceofthecaribbean.net and listen on demand. Thanks again for listening to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis. I was your host, Andre Huey, and stay tuned to Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.